And good afternoon, folks. This is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0 throughout the Waikato. I hope you fellas are having a good day out there. Classic, beautiful spring day out there, isn't it? And very shortly, as a matter of fact, we're going to be talking to local councillor Lisa Thompson. And then we'll follow that up probably by the news and the weather and some gardening to-dos and such things. But while I get myself organised, here goes. Track by Finley Quay called Even After All, which you guys might remember. Hope you enjoy this one.
Even after all, the murdering, even after all, you're suffering so. You know I love you so. You know I love you so and so. Even after all, I'll let you go on, sir, is the order of the day. And I'll let you believe, sir, is the order in this society. You know I love you so. You know I love you so and so. Even after all, this is my money, y'all. Man just feels satisfied. No competition, no competition at all. I just feel sad to start. Them eyes, a gorgeous girl. No demise, a prize. I got to raise it again. Them eyes are gorgeous. I must advance. I don't check for no superficial. It's got to be beneficial. These sonic fruits. These sonic fruits. Sights. These sonic fruits. Got them moving around. All right. Hyperplay. Stepping and rising. Even after all, the murdering that go on, even after all, oh no, you're suffering so. You know I love you so. You know I love you so and so. Even after all, you just survive, soldier, and your soul is beautiful. And your soul is good.
That was Finley Quay, ladies and gentlemen. Whoop, there goes the microphone heading up. That was Finley Quay, ladies and gentlemen, with Even After All. And we're joined in the studio straight away by our guest and local councillor today, Lisa Thompson. Afternoon, Lisa.
Kia ora, good afternoon.
How are you today?
I'm really well, thank you very much indeed. How about you?
Good, thank you. What's been happening today, Lisa?
Actually, I've been at home doing, of all things, some policies and that for Raglan Naturally for our Community Connector role. So we've just recently employed Lara Sweetman. I know that you've met her, and I believe you guys are neighbours almost.
Yes.
And so Lara and I have been working on some of the policies for our Level 3 accreditation for MSD. So I've been busy doing that this week, and just little bits and bobs for council. Obviously, you know, the elections are declared hopefully on Saturday afternoon, Sunday. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I had a good chat with Lara actually. We were chatting about, like me and you have chatted about previously, about getting things going in the towns around Raglan. We were talking about like cricket days.
Yeah.
We were talking about like
the trail ride
thing, the trail
ride and stuff like that. There's actually quite a bit going on out in the rural communities that we probably in the urban area don't hear about so much. So it'd be great when we have more urban rural catch ups. You know, we were able to participate because I remember, and I've spoken to you about this, back in the day when we had the Te Mata Easter Sports down at the Te Mata Domain, which was, that was such a fantastic community event. And then we had the district barbecue, which was hosted at Te Mata School. And I'm sure there were things that happened at Waitatuna and Tiuku, but because I grew up on the southern side of Kareoi, what was then when I was growing up, back in the 70s, that was the real wop-wops. You know, when we saw dust on the road, there would be cries of great delight because it would mean that someone's coming to visit, which didn't happen very often. And it was, more often than not, it would be the Raleigh's salesperson, you know, bringing dresses or the Raleigh's cream and stuff like that. So there was always a great fanfare. Of course, now it's not such a wop-wops anymore with the, you know, smaller subdivisions that have happened around Te Mata and Rōpuki. So there's much more of a connection. But it would be great moving into the future where we had more of those rural run events where us townies can go out to, you know, out to the rural areas to participate, whether it's, district barbecue or whatever it might be, would be fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah, because I always remember like calf club days and things. Oh, does Raglan Area School have those these days?
Not the calf club days at Raglan Area School, but we do have calf club days around the area.
Yeah.
which are fantastic, you know, so you've got your goats and lambs and your calves and that.
Bunny rabbits?
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. And I actually haven't, since my kids finished school, I haven't participated in the, ag days at school. But they were always something really fantastic to celebrate. And, you know, those who didn't have a pet, you got to do things, and I'm talking about when I was growing up, you got to do things like vegetable monsters or garbage monsters and flower sand sources and all of that. So people had different ways of participating. You know, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that'd be a very good plank as well, in between the rural and the urban sort of populations, so to speak.
Well, I do miss the Western Shares, you know, and we used to have the shearing and stuff like that down at the rugby grounds here in Raglan, and they were fantastic, you know, so you'd have really good shearers come out and people would be watching them shearing or crutching or whatever. That was another great event that brought people together. So maybe that's something to look forward to. But I know, you know, you participate in the farmers surfing and there's fishing contest. Obviously, we mentioned before the local trail ride, which was really well attended. Not that I saw it, I saw the the YouTube clip of it, which looked really awesome, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like people had a great day. So there are things that are going on for our rural communities, but it would be really great to have more of the connection with urban and rural.
Hmm. Oh, well, we'll have to work on these things, Lisa.
We'll have to work on these things.
As time goes
by.
Yeah. And you grew up on a farm, Lisa, as well.
I did. I grew up at a place called Te Makaka, which is actually on the northern side of the Aotea Harbour. If everyone knows where Phillips Road is, which comes off Te Papatapu Road.
Beautiful
up there. Yeah, I grew up right down the end there with my 12 brothers and sisters. And my father actually grew up north of the farm, about 3 kilometres up the beach at Matawha. So my cousin Simon Thompson, he's still out on the farm there. And my cousin Dave's out there as well. So have a long history out there. It was a really neat upbringing, actually, you know. One, when you look back, you think, oh, that was, you could be a little bit idealised. You know, we rode horses, we rode motorbikes, barefooted, you know, went down the beach and, you know, old surfboards tied on the back of the old tractor, you know, to go through the water and stuff like that. So we, and I grew up learning to swim in the creek at Parengatai, at the Toreparu. So, you know, so pretty cool things. But, you know, it's changed quite a lot. There's more people living out there, you know, more lifestyle blocks and even just the environment. When I grew up, we could go down to the beach and we had three quite significant pippy beds, of which now you'd be lucky to find pippies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was talking to a friend yesterday about how we used to, at our marae at Motakotako, which is on Phillips Road, and we've just rebuilt our wharekai, so we've got a new wharekai, and we're just rebuilding our wharenui, actually. So we'll be back open sooner rather than later, and we're a pokai marae, so we are a marae that's part of the kingitanga, as the kingitanga moves around the region where the kingitanga marae's are. Yes. And you know, we would, as a child, you know, we would get all, we're known for our seafood at it, Motakotako. So I remember going down and getting pawa, you know, collecting pawa and pupu from the Aotea Harbour, flounders, tuna from the Toreparu, you know, mussels, pippies, you know. So we would gather all of our own seafood, our own kaimoana, which now we gather it from Pack and Save or the Seafood Bazaar.
Yes.
But that's a number of things, you know, the environmental stuff, but also it's about our people are living further away, so it's that time constraints for all that gathering of that kai. So, yeah.
Do you ever get bitten by an eel when you're swimming in the creeks?
Pardon?
Do you ever get bitten by an eel when you're swimming
in
the creeks?
Never. Got bitten by an eel, and it's funny because just recently, last summer, I took my neighbours from out at Wainamu Road where I live. I went out with, took them out to the farm with some of their whānau, and we actually went down to the beach to the creek, and there's a little diving board that's been put into the creek, and we were jumping off that. It was a log across the creek, actually, and we were diving off it, and then I didn't tell them, but I looked down, and this big eel slithered out from underneath and swam off into the dark depths of the creek, so I wasn't going to tell the kids, there's an eel. But I've never been bitten by one.
No, nor have I. But, yeah, I've heard some stories about eel bites. It's one of those myths, isn't it? Oh, watch out, man. They're getting their creek. There's eels in there, blah, blah, blah. But, very rarely happens, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah, don't worry about getting into the creeks and having a little swim and things like that.
Yeah, so you don't have to be deterred by that or be scared. When I was growing up, my older brothers and sisters, we used to go down to our pond, and we would deliberately put our legs in so we'd get leeches on us.
Just see, you could handle it, though.
Wait for the leeches, could come through. I don't know. And then we used to line up big cattle ticks off from behind the sheep's ears and line them up and hit them with a hammer to see how they'd burst. Isn't that gross? That's what we used to do, the pastimes.
Fun.
Of a country kid. And we never went to Hamilton very much. And one day I was allowed to go with my father. And I must have been about 7 or 8, actually, and we went to what was at that time quite a flash cafe, and, you know, as it was in those days where you got buttered white bread on a plate and stuff like that, which was really amazing.
Very nice.
And we met my auntie and uncle, my dad's brother and my auntie, for a cup of tea, and so I was in my best gears and everything, and then I was scratching behind my ear. And I was scratching, I could feel something. And then I was like sitting there, and then they pulled out from behind my ear. And I went, oh, Dad, I got a cattle tick. So I had pulled out this cattle tick from behind my ear because we'd been shearing that week. So I'd been playing in the wool bales.
Yeah.
So I, needless to say, I never, ever went out again with my father. So.
12 kids. So where were you in the line of things?
I was number 13.
13. So yeah. We're actually the 13th, the youngest, the baby.
Yeah, the youngest. But, you know, Mum came from a big family and so did Dad. So it was not unusual. And if both my parents were still alive, they would be, Dad would be 102 and Mum would be, I think, 98. Right. So, you know, they were of a generation that big families were the norm as opposed to not being the norm.
How many of your siblings are still kind of around town? Or around the region, should we say?
I've got a brother that lives here and two sisters that live here in Whangaroa. Two out at Phillips Road, actually, and my brother out at Timata. And I have others of my siblings who are on the east coast of the North Island and then others who are down in the South Island. And then I have three sisters who are in Australia.
Right. Oh, well. Some stayed, some went.
Yeah.
So it goes.
Yeah. Yep. So they're all over the place. So, yeah. So I feel very lucky that, you know, I had a rural upbringing, that I grew up on a farm, and really lucky that we've still got our family farm. You know, that my cousin Simon's still on their family farm and that we're still on ours, which is something quite special. And where I grew up at Makaka was also where my mother's people on our Whakumarirangi side come from as well, from Raurau. So yeah, I feel really lucky. Yeah. And that, you know, feel really good too, because going to Timata school and then to Raglan area school, still having many of the people who I went to school with and grew up with still living in the area in Whangaroa, which is quite neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, no, it's deep roots you have around here, Lisa.
Yeah, well, it's quite neat, eh? And, you know, like just saying, the Timata Hall was built by my grandfather's brother, and so too was the oldest classroom at Timata School as well. So,
that'd be beautiful. Cody, would it be Matai or?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've been in both those halls only once each, I think. And yeah, beautiful, lovely old native timber they have lining the place. And speaking of the ward, anyway, it's just been extended, hasn't it, Lisa, for this one? Where was it and where is it now, Lisa?
So it was to Glentui Lane. So, you know, if you go over the divvy, Glentui Lane is to the right there. So it went from, obviously it encompasses this, the southern side of Whangaroa Harbour, then goes down to Makomako, as the crow flies, then over the Whirauroa ranges.
Makomako, for those who might not know, where is Makomako?
If you go on to Papatapu Road and continue down to the Pākuka Bridge, that goes out to the Aotea Harbour. And if you go further down there, sort of... If you know where the Kafia Road is, from where it comes past Wairanga, Bridal Veil Falls, and then you can go past Lake Disappear,
if you've been past there.
And then you basically go down, and then it's where the Kafia Road hits Te Papatapu Road. You could say that really is the point, in a way, of the boundary of where the ward goes to, and then over the Whirauroas to Waitatuna, to some of Old Mountain Road, then over the divvy, down to Glentui Lane, then into some of Waingaro, and then up Aotearoa Road. Okay. So that's really the ward. But it's been extended out to Kākariki Road, because when we obviously had the representation review and had to look at the ward boundary areas for the entire district, it changed the areas. And Raglan, the Whangaroa ward, which it will be called in the next triennium, hasn't changed significantly, unlike the other wards across the district, which have actually changed quite significantly. So the ward now goes to Kākariki Road, inland to some of Whangaroa, then back up. And the reason that was really was because we now have the Māori wards. So out of the Raglan ward, 700 elected 700 people in the ward were on the Māori electoral roll. So they were taken out of our ward numbers. So we sort of had to balance that by the extension of the boundary areas.
Right, okay.
So it's quite a complicated.
Sounds complicated.
Yeah, quite complicated. So, yeah, so the Whangaroa ward is the one that's still very similar, will still remain similar. The difference will be, obviously, in the coming triennium is that the community board area has significantly increased.
Yes.
To go out to almost Waitatuna over the Whareroas, to include, you know, Makomako and Phillips Road, actually. So what was the Wop-Wops is now in the community board area. So that, you know, has had an impact on the community board area, which will be interesting in the next triennium.
Will be interesting. And so I guess that takes, like, the community board's way of thinking about things from, you know, more urban to they start, I guess, going to start thinking more rural as well, I suppose.
And I think the biggest, you know, the biggest part for rural people, and many of them in the area, actually Raglan is their main town of interest anyway. So yeah, they have a lot of interest in coming in here, whether it's sports or school, socially, also, you know, doing shopping, all of those sorts of things. So are very aligned to the urban area. And, you know, I think the biggest, you know, challenge for the community board will be meeting the needs of the rural area, because the most important thing to them is their connectivity with the roads, you know, and rightly so, because that's their lifeline. That's where they do their business. That's where they travel, you know. So, yeah, so it will be good to have that representation. And it's fantastic that Ross Wallace is standing for the community board. He brings a lot of skills, you know, in his role in governance, but also his practicality. He's a farmer, and, you know, he's invested, you know, with his family being here for generations, and they'll be here for generations more.
Yeah, I had him in here a few weeks ago for an interview, and he's also been an advocate for Fonterra well. So he's got that representative, those skills and everything like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, being an orchardist and things like that. He's really balanced. So it will be great if he got onto the community board, because, you know, he brings that rural view as well, but not set in any... You know, I don't find him to be set in any one issue or anything like that, but very open to working for the good of all, which I think is important, you know. So, yeah, so there are all of those sorts of challenges, isn't it, between the urban and the rural, and meeting somewhere in between.
I often wonder about this, Lisa. I mean, like, I think it's maybe because, like, most people probably in the days, you know, like a generation or so ago even, would have had like an uncle or a grandparent or someone on a farm or whatever. But these days it's not so much the case like that. And so I think that's what's kind of created this, the whole urban sort of rural divide, where it used to be like, oh, you know, I've got an uncle or a grandparent or whatever on a farm or whatever. But yeah, that's not the case these days. And I don't know, how do you sort of go, how do you go about getting the divide, because it has been driven as well, you know, there's a lot of, you know, dirty dairying talk and that has been happening, and, you know, oh, farmers this, farmers that, and
I think we have to move aside that as a community, you know, and look at that bigger picture, because I do understand about, you know, the dairying and I think it's more looking at those, the bigger commercial dairy propositions, you know, that have a big impact on the environment. But when we look around what we do here in Whangaroa, we don't have that, you know.
No, we don't
have that intensified farming and things like that. We've got people who love the land, and who've been brought up on the land and, you know, are really respectful. So I think it's having that, and I guess it's what the Climate Action Steering Group is doing, is sort of doing a stock take of what we have within our community and how we can work together for good outcomes for all. You know, and how do we support our rural community? What does that look like? It's understanding their challenges of farming in landscapes that aren't the easiest of landscapes. You know, we've got, we're hilly, but gentle rolling. We're also quite mountainous. If you were out at the Whanga coast, it's a different proposition altogether from the inland farming.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really diverse, and it's something to be celebrated as well.
Oh, for sure.
And not to look at, you know, all farmers as being bad practice, you know, bad practice on the land. And actually, how can we support better practices for the use of land in our rural areas and in our urban areas, you know? And because, you know, farmers have a lot of practical skills, and there's lots of practical skills in the urban areas. So I think it's cutting some slack for each other and just recognising where our strengths and weaknesses are and working together. Because, you know, I often think about, you know, with a pandemic or if we have an earthquake or another or a natural disaster, whether it's a weather event, flooding, you know, we're going to be relying on the rural communities to support. Say if the roads got cut off, we would have to look at who's got generators, where are the resources, who's got tractors if we need to move stuff. So we all have to work together in those instances. And, you know, the urban community, equally, how can we support our rural communities if something should happen in Tamata? How do we get resources out to people should they need it, if it's flooding or whatever? You know, so, and I think Whangaroa is a community that does that really well.
Yeah, I know you've been heavily involved yourself with the COVID response and things like that, you know, getting food packages out and working in with rural women's and rural support and things like that as well.
Yeah, yeah. And rural people often, they just get stuff done, eh? You know, when they see something, they'll actually pull out the stops and go out and support people, you know, really generously. And certainly we have seen that over the last 2.5-3 years of where people have put their hand up to, deliver Kai packs out to people who haven't been, maybe don't have a car. So we see that collaboration. Well, I do anyway, certainly, you know, not even just being part of the response team. And the response team, actually, it's not, wasn't established not just because of the pandemic, but also the possibility of that civil defence response as well. That gives us that our own agency, I suppose, as a community to do stuff where we don't have to wait for others to come and rescue us. And that's really important. And
so absolutely.
Those relationships, rural and urban, are really important. And then obviously, you know, our rural landscape. If I just think about, I was talking to a resident of the Whanga Coast just today who've got a farm out on Whanga. You know, that is an amazing landscape and something that we should be really celebrating as a community and how unique it is, you know, from the ocean to the mountaintop is quite incredible. You know, and it's a special place. It has the flora and fauna. That's amazing. And, you know, moving forward, what would that look like in the next 10 or 20 years in terms of our community and visitors engaging with that area? Would we have shared cycleway walkways where out to Te Toto Gorge, for example, or, you know, all of those sorts of things. So that's sort of urban, rural.
I guess someone, yes. So we're talking about... We're talking to Lisa Thompson here, the local councillor who's currently been 6 years.
6 years.
6 years.
Yep, yes. So I did six. I've done 6 years on the as councillor, so two terms, and then I did a year and a half on the community board because I was elected halfway through a term.
Yeah. And you're going back for another go. Why, Lisa?
I love our community.
Yeah.
I really love this community, and I think we've done some really good work over the last 7.5 years, you know, building relationships and capacity. And I think that local government, actually, even though it's not looking that great for the voter turnout, is a place where you can actually make a difference. It's slow, but you can make a difference. And I really believe that. I really enjoy, I know it sounds weird, but I really enjoy serving the community. And, you know...
Nothing weird about that, is there?
Hey?
Nothing weird about that, is there?
No, and I've just found it really rewarding. It's challenging because sometimes you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And then sometimes, you know, it was for me, I always try and value-base my decision-making and try and look at what is for the greater good, you know, and the greater good could be the greater good for the environment or for young people or whatever. So try and be considered. And I think actually the triennium coming up is going to be challenging you know, we'll have at least 50% turnover of councillors around the decision-making table, which in itself is pretty tumultuous. we've got an LTP, which is the long-term plan, deliberations coming up in 2024. That's going to be massive.
Yes.
And then we've got government reforms.
Yeah, the government reforms, I suppose, yeah, I don't know if you know any more than anybody else about that, but it's going to be a big shake-up of how local government's kind of run, isn't it?
Well, I actually don't know. So the paper that has been undertaken about local government and that makeup will come out at the end of October, and that will actually go out for further consultation, I believe, until February next year.
So consultation with like the Waikato, Waikato councils and things like
councils
that?
Councils across New Zealand and out to the general public as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. From the papers that I've seen so far, you know, and I attended the Local Government New Zealand National Conference 6 weeks ago, and, you know, already earmarking that local government needs to work more in partnership with hapu and iwi across the country. We need to engage more authentically and genuinely with our communities. So there's quite a lot, and I'm not surprised by those changes, but of course we're still governed by the Local Government Act and legislation, whether it's the RMA, which obviously there's RMA changes as well coming
yes,
in.
Yes, it's going to be broken up into three different bills, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's lots of things going on. So I think continuity around the council table is really important for the next coming term. And also I think, you know, it's exciting too because we'll have the two Māori wards, you know, in place. So just having experience around that governance table to support our Māori ward councillors as well will be really important. And people are going to have to hit the ground running. So we've, you know, in council already Democracy is working on the induction program for all councillors, including the incumbents, if we get back in, whoever that might be. So the induction program, which will be ongoing. So they ask for feedback from us as elected members from this term. And obviously it's been challenging because a large part of what we've been doing has been online because of the pandemic. And I guess we were lucky because we only had two new councillors this term that came on, and the rest of us were already, we were incumbents and we were successful in getting in. So we had that anchor in council and that continuity where we won't next term. And with those challenges and changes coming, yeah, continuity I think is really important.
Absolutely. And do you kind of get the vibe it's going to get more, the changes to local government from central government? Are they, is it going to get more maybe centralised or more
I have no
into
idea.
The community? Do you get an inkling about it?
Yeah, I actually don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
It will be really interesting to see, you know, if we become like super cities or super, you know, councils. I don't know. I don't know if that will be the best way for hearing the voices of communities, enabling, you know, other elected bodies like the community boards to have more decision-making power as well.
Interesting. Most of the mayoral candidates were talking about that, weren't they?
And it's how do we do that?
And
how do we do that? Because it needs to be resourced. I know that from my experience being on the community board, but also the last 6 years as councillor, you know, our community board members work bloody hard to do the work that they do. And, you know, given that their remuneration is so small, they probably only get like 5 cents an hour for all of the work that they've done. That's the truth, you know, but it just goes to show. So, that, you know, though, when we do devolve more power, it needs to be really well resourced and thought out. And how we enable that, and what is it that the community boards really want that power to be? What decision making do they want to be involved in? And I think what we'll find is that each community board will be quite different in their perception of what they can do. Because the Raglan Community Board, honestly, and I'm not just saying this because I'm biased because I'm the councillor, but we operate very differently from any other community board or community committee across the district.
Yeah, and that's kind of my thinking. I mean, if you've got a strong community board, like, you know, fortunately we do here in Raglan, you know, a lot of Wantawa people and, you know, no doubt whoever gets selected will be onto it and get on with the job and things like that. We've got a board like that that functions really well and is a representative of the community. To my mind, they should get devolved, a bit of power to do this and that, whatever, and resources. To me, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. Like, you might get other communities where, the community board's not so strong and no one really cares or whatever. And I know central government's not kind of so good at, they're like, this is the thing for everybody. But I think maybe there needs to be a little change mindset around that so you can get...
It's more bespoke, It's more bespoke to each board and the capacity and the skills that sit around that table as well, is really important. And if we reflect on what the community board has done, what we've done over the last 6 years, it's not insignificant, bringing in that funding for the Wharf project and that, the shortlisting for the Better Off funding that went, was finalised last Thursday in council. Obviously, those decisions on the 19 projects that we've shortlisted, that will be a decision by the DIA because they're the funder for the Better Off funding. But out of that, there were four projects from Raglan, including the Wharf project, the continuation of that. So that's not insignificant, and a lot of that is because of the work that the community board has done in the community as well. And also $840,000 was on that short list for allocation of security cameras across the district, which includes Raglan for the police. So, not insignificant things that the board and I have been involved in, And so moving forward, it does come down to the people who sit there and the way that they can work together and see what it is for the greater good, and be able to work respectfully together. And I think that's what the board has done really well.
Yeah. So if I'm sitting around at home at the moment, Lisa, having a cup of tea at lunchtime, thinking, oh, man, I can't be bothered to voting, what's the point, what would you say to these people?
Go and vote.
Why should I, Lisa? I don't know. I mean, does it really matter,
For women, the suffragette movement, gave women the vote here in New Zealand. People have fought hard. We've fought world wars for democracy, and we live in... a society that affords us that right to participate in democracy. And it's our civic duty, I believe, to participate. And if we don't, then in a way you lose a voice.
Absolutely.
So it's easy. If you haven't received your voting papers, I really encourage you to go down to the library office and speak with the lovely team that are down there who are really skilled in getting those special votes in. If you can't do that during working hours, they're open on Saturday and they'll actually have staff there specifically doing special votes. So I just really encourage you to exercise your democratic right as citizens of Aotearoa to participate and get involved, because local government and local democracy is where we can effectively make change. And I believe that, not just because people go, oh, you're just a politician and yada yada. I actually really believe that because I've seen some of what we've done and the proof's in the pudding. It's not always perfect, but life isn't, and that's the beauty of community-led decision making.
For sure. And I had to go make a special vote the other day, and it was, it's not very difficult, folks. You just cruise down there, talk. I think it was Holly I was talking to.
Holly, she's been doing it. Yeah.
And it was easy. Yeah, just cruise up, grab your thing, and get your little pamphlet. And, of course, if you want information about, who's going for what or whatever, you can always look back through Aaron's done, interviews with basically everybody.
Raglan Radio, you guys, Aaron has done a fantastic job. You guys have done a fantastic job. And there's also on Raglan Radio, obviously, that was just shared today on the notice board, was the Meet the Candidates, 2 hours worth of footage from Ray, Dip Rose, who did from Living Productions, who videoed and has edited that. So you can see from that, the... kōrero from all of the candidates and the exercises that Kawe got each candidate to do. So you'll get a good feel of the each candidate for whichever seat, you know, whether it's the community board, whether if you're on the Māori role, obviously you can vote for the mayor, you can vote for the community board, and you have up to 6 votes for the community board. Of course, that's if you are in the community board area. And you can also vote for any one of the 3 Māori ward candidates. So that's if you are on the Māori electoral roll.
I must say they're really strong candidates too. I was at the candidates meeting and you know, I mean, yeah, I was really impressed with
Shani.
All 3 of them, all to be honest.
They,
you know, like
they were, and they had very different skills.
Yeah,
eh?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
there's Kore, yeah. Shani, and Tilly.
Yeah, yeah,
and they all come with very different skills. But it was really neat.
Eh? Yeah,
we've
I was
got
really
3
impressed.
Candidates. Yeah. Yeah. So if I'm the Māori role, yeah. So those who you can vote for. If you are on the general role, you can vote again for the mayoral candidate. For the community board, up to 6 candidates there, providing, of course, again, if you are living in the community board area, and the Whangaroa General Ward. So that's the ward that I currently am councillor for. So that's on the general role.
All right. Do you want to give a plug? What people should vote for you, Lisa, while you're on here?
I don't know.
How many times have you done this over the last few weeks?
No, just get out and vote. You know, just get out and vote. If you vote for me, that's great. And if not, that's absolutely fine as well. But just get out and exercise your democratic right to participate in decision making. So, yeah, that's about it all from me.
All right.
Oh, and a quick plug. Remember, at the end of this month, on the 29th of October, Raglan Naturally is hosting the second Tangata Tiriti workshop here in Raglan. It's only $20, and you can go onto the Raglan Naturally website to get more information about that. That's a really fantastic opportunity. I've done those workshops, and they're really great, so I can highly recommend them.
Me too. I was at the last one, and yeah, the $20 alone is not going to, you know, wouldn't even cover the delicious lunch we got either. It was beautiful.
I know, and the morning tea and afternoon
and the morning
tea.
Afternoon
and
tea.
A good company.
Yes, yes. And it was, yeah. It was interesting, that one, because I didn't really expect to get – I didn't really know what to expect, and I didn't know how much I was going to get out of it. But I actually, yeah, learned a lot, to be honest. It was actually really, really interesting. So, yeah, I encourage everybody to come along to that one.
Yeah, yeah. It's well worth it. And obviously Raglan Naturally is planning on follow-up workshops on different topics just to consolidate those learnings from the day. And Ingrid, who takes it, the facilitator, she's probably one of the best treaty facilitators for that organisation. So for even just having her and paying $20, that's like bargain of the century.
For sure. She did an excellent job. Yeah, she's you can tell she's very skilled in that area. And, yeah, just interesting, yeah, the stuff that she was talking about, yeah, that I didn't know about, you know. It was, yeah, it was really, really interesting.
Now, the Declaration of Independence as well, and,
yeah,
and the way, and I really like how she opens it up with, where, you know, do a quick introduction, where do you come from and why? You know, and realise we all came from different places. And that, you know, people came for peace, they were looking for a better life, they fell in love, or, you know, all of those sorts of things. So it was a neat way to start. And then, you know, at the after lunch, going through, you know, the systematic legislative changes that happened to alienate hapu from who they were. And then, you know, anyway, I won't give too much away, but it's an incredible learning experience. And if you didn't know that there was a Declaration of Independence, that in itself is something to learn about. And then the treaty, of course, and how, what led to that and what led to the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I think that was probably my biggest kind of learning of the whole day was around the Declaration of Independence, because I'd heard of it, but I didn't really
realise what
mind,
it meant,
but, yeah,
but
it was,
that declaration
yeah, it's a big
of
thing.
This
yeah.
being a sovereign nation,
yeah.
a trading sovereign nation,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, which is pretty amazing, eh?
So, yeah, it is amazing, yeah.
Just thinking about and how, and I think a lot of people are surprised about how Māori were actual, the, you know, ultimate traders. They were trading all over the world,
yeah.
you know, in the 1830s, and, you know, so they were travelling to New York or to Europe. They had boats and they were, yeah, they were trading, international trading partners, really.
Yeah.
You know, and that led to, you know, the Declaration of Independence. We could have our own sovereign flag to fly whilst we were trading as a nation. So that was pretty cool. Yeah. So I think it's quite surprising, isn't it, when you learn of the commerce that actually Hapu were participating as international traders. It's another big learning curve.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, and that's the 22nd, did you say?
29th. 29th. Saturday the 29th,
Saturday 29th of October. That's coming up maybe in a few weeks. So, yeah, definitely get along to that one, folks, because, yeah,
it's online, Raglan Naturally.
And also that video, I think, is also on the Raglan Naturally and the Community Board website and the Raglan Radio site of the candidates' debate.
It is, And it was just put up on the notice board today.
So
that's really good. And, of course, there's the transcripts for every interview that Aaron has undertaken with each of the candidates, which are fantastic. So even if you didn't want to listen to the kōrero, you can just read the transcript. So it's a fantastic job. Well done to the crew. Well done to Aaron and the team for producing that. So, you know, I just encourage people, if you're still undecided, go in and listen to those, you know, because it gives life to the piece of paper you might look at in the blurb that you might read of ours, because we only had 150 words to try and express why would you vote for someone.
Yeah.
It's not 150 words is not much.
All right, Lisa, well, thanks for coming. I really appreciate
it. Okay, thank you. Thanks for your time.
Any last words you want to put out there to the listeners?
No, just take care.
Take care.
Vote. Yeah, and vote. That's exactly right. Thanks, Craig.
All right. Thank you very much, Lisa. Appreciate that.
See ya.
All right. It's Lisa Thompson, local council there. I'm going to play Lawrence Arabian now, his song, The O3.
Thank you.
We are, folks. That was a Phoenix Foundation there with Give Up Your Dreams. And before that, was a song I played before that? One was Lawrence Arabia, the 03. I think that was the one before that. And just like that, folks, there goes
the show pretty much. So I haven't really had time to put in the do the weather and and the news, which I spent a good hour writing out and things like that. But yeah, there is an Antarctic chill coming up, and there is heaps and heaps of stuff to plant. But let's stay tuned next week before I get to all these things. But yes, it's going to be a chilly next couple of days as the Antarctic blast, like I say, comes up the country. And so don't put your woolies away yet, folks. And that's the show for the week. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back again next week. And see us out. I've got to get out of the studio. I think Prince Harry's coming in today to do his show. So I'll be in a dilly-dally. See us out. Here goes David Kilgore and the Heavy Eights with Chop Me in Half. Ka kite, folks, and mi haere aho. I've got to go. Thank you, Whai Aruhi, for that one. David Kilgore and the Heavy Eights.